BAL Files, the ultimate Ravens podcast.
Welcome aboard. With week three in the books, it's time to take a spin around the league and tackle the biggest stories with the coach, Brian Billick, joining us as he does every week to share his insight regarding what happened last weekend and what's to come this weekend. In this week's Rapid Fire Overtime segment, the one and only Sean Salisbury joins us with his Tell It Like It Is take on the NFL. But as always, we start with the big interview, so let's get to it.
The big interview.
As we check in with David Ginsberg of the Associated Press, we'll talk about the Ravens here today. You can follow him on Twitter at Ginzy3. That's G-I-N-Z-Y-3. How are you doing today, David?
I'm doing great. Thanks much.
Well, today the Ravens are doing great, too. I know most people expected the team to be better this year, but maybe not 3-0 better. Now, they beat a Jacksonville Jaguars team, but at this point, that's not really the story. The story is the Ravens, with Joe Flacco healthy again, are 3-0.
That is the story, and we won't talk about the teams that they beat that have a collective one win. We will talk about them being 3-0 and on top of the AFC North. They're doing it by doing exactly the opposite of what they did last year, which is win close games.
Well, and that is the key, because you're talking about the schedule is what it is. You know, certain teams have played teams that aren't that great. Some teams have had a bad record against teams that are great. It doesn't really matter. All you can do is play that team that's in front of you. And the close games, whether you'd like them to be close or not, being able to win those matters, especially later in the year and especially in this extremely difficult division.
Well, exactly. And, you know, you look at Pittsburgh that lost to Philadelphia 34-3. The Ravens, they're 3-0. They've beaten Cleveland, Buffalo, and Jacksonville, as we mentioned. And they didn't win by much, but they did win, and two of those games were on the road. So you can only play the schedule, as you said, and they've won all three. So they make no apologies for being 3-0. And, you know, it's pretty hard to assess what type of team this is so far. But at this point, you can't be better than 3-0 after three games. It's only the second time in franchise history that they've been 3-0.
You most certainly cannot. There are only five teams in the league that are unbeaten. And that win over the Bills looks a fair sight better after they beat the Cardinals rather decisively yesterday as well. Joe Flacco had an interesting game last year. Last night, he played at one point, got 21 straight completions, but only completed 29 out of 40 passes and threw two interceptions. Sort of a tale of two cities type of game for him. At one point, he looked unstoppable, and the rest of it was kind of all over the place. What did you see from Flacco in this sort of third game of the season?
Well, that's exactly what I saw. First half, very good. Second half tailed off, and you know the defense actually saved him because two of those picks really gave Jacksonville some pretty good position and took away what were potential scoring drives for Baltimore. So, you know, at this point, let's face it, though, he's played three games since his injury in November, not counting a quarter of a preseason game. So, you know, it's a work in progress, as are the Ravens. He's doing well. And also, keep in mind, he doesn't have much of a running game backing him up. They're passing, they passed almost, 118 times, 76 runs. They're definitely relying on the pass. He's got some good receivers, but given the fact that this is a pretty much one-dimensional team at this point, they're not complaining at how Flacco's been playing.
Yeah, that's exactly where I wanted to go, because I know they're waiting on Kenneth Dixon, who a lot of people believe can maybe take over the starter's role there. But in the meantime, they're cobbling together a rushing game with Terrence West and Justin Forsett. And the guy that ran it in for the score was Flacco on a little nifty little scramble to the left side that he managed to take in there. But you're seeing the passing game, despite the fact it being one-dimensional, still be pretty effective. Steve Smith Sr., 8 catches, 87 yards, and the remarkable return to form, speaking of a guy that's coming back from injury, of Dennis Pitta, who's really looked fantastic back in action for the Ravens. That with Mike Wallace, it actually seems to me that while they're not where they want to be, this really does have the makings of a pretty good passing attack as the season goes on.
Yeah, and also Rashad Perryman, who missed all of last year with a knee injury. This is basically his rookie season, even though he was a top draft pick a year ago and supposed to be that deep threat they lost when Torrey Smith went elsewhere and went to San Francisco. So, yeah, Flacco has plenty of selections, and he's picking them opening day. He had 9 different targets. So, yeah, he's doing well with what he's got. The passing game is right there. And, yeah, if Kenneth Dixon comes back, basically Harbaugh said today that they just need the running game to take away the idea that all they're going to do is pass. If the other team can at least respect the run, then that'll open up the passing game even more. They don't want to run 50, 60 times a game, or even or rather 50 or 60%. They just want to make it a threat so that other teams can at least figure that they can run the ball. And then that leaves it open for Flacco to pick his targets, middle, outside, deep. He's got options.
Well, we know that the Jaguars haven't won a game. They haven't looked all that great. But that said, they have a really good passing attack. Blake Bortles was held to only 194 yards, intercepted three times, one by C.J. Mosley, which I'm not sure will be surpassed all year as far as a highlight reel interception. And they got nothing done on the ground. Really, the Ravens' defense just looked absolutely stifling yesterday. And what are you seeing from the defense that seems to be getting better as the season goes along?
Front seven, excellent. Jimmy Jernigan in the middle, really jamming it up. He had one series. He had a series of plays. He knocked away passes. He had sacks. Suggs is coming to form. He had two sacks yesterday after not having one the week before. They really got a very good defensive front, and it's really made the difference for them. That, you know, I'm not really fond of their cornerbacks, and Eric Weddle has been great in the backfield, but basically, they've really put the pressure on the opposing quarterbacks, and that's going to make the difference. That is really the difference between this year and last, in that they can pressure the quarterback. Guy's not just standing back there looking for a target. He's under pressure, and Bortles threw three picks because of it.
Right. Four sacks, three picks. Oftentimes, those go arm in arm, and it's not even necessarily the sacks that rattle guys. Of course, it can sometimes just be the consistent, sustained pressure. And this year, Bortles seems particularly susceptible to that. The fact that they were able to bring that pressure was very, very impressive. So, yeah, we won't talk about who they've beaten because that doesn't really matter anymore. That's all in the past. Now, going forward, they take on a Raiders team that defensively, even though they had a pretty good game on Sunday, this is a team that still gives up a league-leading 476 yards a game. How do the Ravens intend on taking advantage of that?
Well, they played the Raiders last year, and I think the final score, I'm just trying to go to recall, 35-33. This is going to be a high-scoring game. The Ravens are an improved defense, so I'm not sure that the Ravens, and this game, that game was in Oakland, this one's in Baltimore. That will be somewhat of an advantage for the Ravens. I don't know what the Raiders are going to have to do. I think the same thing that they always have to do, stop the run first and then look for Flacco to pass. The challenge for the Ravens, and by the way, this is by far the best team they will face thus far in 4 weeks, challenge for the Ravens is to stop the Raiders. They could not do that last year. Carr passed them crazy. And they must do it defensively if they're going to win the game. Could be a high-scoring game, but really it's incumbent upon the Ravens' defense to stop Oakland. I think the offense will take care of itself, but that said, if they get into a high-scoring game, which is unlike any they've had thus far this year, it could be trouble for Baltimore.
Today, John Harbaugh had one of my favorite coach quotes that I've heard in a while. He was talking about how things are breaking their way a little bit, talking about looking for parking spaces. He said, when we go to the mall, we don't start looking for parking spaces in the back row. We drive to the front row. There might be someone pulling out. Someone may leave it just as we come in. And that's a good way to approach life. That kind of optimism, and plus the fact this team, in its last eight wins, have all been decided by 6 points or less. They've been able to stay cool and get the job done in those tight games. This seems like the kind of situation in which whoever you beat is not relevant. The confidence starting to build with this team can start to snowball.
That was exactly, actually that came with my question, in which I literally said what you just said. Can you get confidence in winning these three close ones the next time you get into one? And then Harbaugh said, yes, you can. And he also mentioned it was him and his brother that just seemed to have things fall their way. And also, by the way, after that question, someone said, so how long do you actually drive around the parking lot waiting for that spot to open? And he had said, well, maybe a little bit, but, eventually that spot does open. And, yes, I think that last year the Ravens got into a close game and they pretty much figured they were going to lose. And I pointed out in my story today that last year they played Jacksonville. Jacksonville won on a last-second field goal after Doomerville was called for a face mask. on what was supposed to be the final play. This year, Ravens block a field goal, come back down, get a 54-yard field goal by Justin Tucker, and win the game. Exact opposite of last year. And the Ravens hope to sustain that type of success. And some could call it luck the rest of the way, and at least make the playoffs. Right now, they're first place in the AFC North.
And that's a very good chance of making the playoffs. Most of the teams that do that, it's about 75% chance of when you're 3-0 that you end up in the playoffs in some capacity. Looking at this, this last run, it sounds like the last run, of course, unless he changes his mind, for Steve Smith, had an interesting run-in with Jalen Ramsey, the high draft pick for the Jaguars, who I guess started talking a little trash, basically said he was an old man. Steve Smith did not take to that particularly well, going off on his Twitter account and then even appearing on television this morning. That's always been a thing with Steve Smith. He's a feisty guy, and sometimes it gets him in a little bit of trouble. But sometimes he's one of those players that a lot of people have talked with him, and they don't like playing against him, but his teammates like playing with him. What kind of energy does he bring, even at his age, to this squad?
A ton of energy. And someone asked Harbaugh today whether he talked to Steve Smith, and Harbaugh gives a big smile and goes, "No, I did not." Because you know what? Steve Smith is great for that locker room. He brings a fire that they really haven't had. Terrell Suggs wanted to be it, but he's really the fire that is Ray Lewis. And even though he's an offensive guy, I'm not going to compare him completely to Ray Lewis, who was the ultimate team leader. But Steve Smith in that locker room, Steve Smith on that field is a leader. And very feisty because he wants to win. He really doesn't care too much about his numbers, except he knows that if he makes a catch, he's going to help Baltimore win. And really, when they had third downs and fourth downs, that's who Flacco was looking for, because that's your sure-handed guy who doesn't mind getting right in the middle of the field, getting right in front of a defender and making a catch. And his teammates know that and respect him for it. And he's a big part of this offense, a big part of the locker room.
Well, the Ravens are rolling, and David Ginsberg is the person to pay attention to with Associated Press. You can follow him at Twitter, at Ginzy3, that's G-I-N-Z-Y-3. David, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. This is one of the more fascinating stories, I think, of the first 3 weeks. It's been terrific to break it down with you.
Been my pleasure. Thanks a million for having me.
And speaking of the Ravens, we will have their longtime head coach, Brian Billick, coming up next. Stay tuned.
Around the league.
And now to go around the NFL, we bring in the coach, Brian Billick, brought to you by SeatGeek. Visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. Make sure you and your family are getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. Coach, an interesting week where the NFL starts to sort some things out here. It's only 3 weeks in, but it feels like we've learned a couple things about some teams. And then there's a few we found out we didn't learn anything at all. I want to start right off with the Cardinals and Bills, a game in which Rex Ryan's seat could not have been any hotter, was basically almost in flames, and then they go out and absolutely trounce the Cardinals in a game where, quite frankly, Carson Palmer, to me, looked for the first time like he maybe was getting a little bit old. What did you see from both those teams this week?
Yeah, I think it was a surprise. It was an opportunity for Arizona, and you can always talk about that going from the quasi-West Coast to East Coast. They were playing at basically 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning body time, which is always difficult. But in an opportunity, in an atmosphere, and as you said, we've all talked all week about the pressure that Rex Ryan and the Bills were under at home. Had it not started out not well, you kind of know the way that crowd would have gone. But the thing that jumped out at me was just how much more physical the Bills were on both sides of the ball. Arizona came into the season as a physical front seven. They wanted to be able to run the ball. We know the explosives they could have with Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald in that group. And they just lack that physicalness, and that's something that's got to be a concern going forward.
So let's go over to the game that I thought it was early. It was the Thursday game, and a little bit stunning, really. The Houston Texans off to a good start, just looked completely hapless and hopeless in Foxborough. Jacoby Brissett in his very first start showed up and played pretty well. Looked like Bill Belichick managed to just scheme Brock Osweiler into oblivion. How much of this do you chalk up to a bad game by the Texans where you just kind of crumple it up and say, let's go on to next week? Or how many things did you see in that game that maybe concerned you about the Texans? And by the way, who are the Patriots going to play at quarterback next week?
Yeah, good question. We all have this well-founded confidence in New England at any time they're at home. That's just a tough place to play. And it's a tough place to play. And why are tough places to play? Because the team is good. Yeah, the crowd is a difference and can be loud noise and stuff like that. But they're tough at home because they're good. And you knew the game plan they wanted to have. Brissett was less than 20 passes, very efficient, didn't turn the ball over, converted on some third down with his legs, saw a whole bunch of blue air at Blount. They ran for 185 yards total on the night on close to 40 attempts. And you could see that Houston just couldn't get anything going. It seemed like it was almost every three and out, which begs the question, okay, where does Houston go from here? Yeah, they're in a division that looks to be very winnable. But again, the challenge for Houston is, okay, can you progress through the playoffs? Have you shown any sign that your team, if in the playoffs, can go on the road, it can go into a Pittsburgh, go into a New England, and win? And they certainly didn't on Thursday night. Doesn't mean that they're not going to get better. And for New England, it's this faith in Bill Belichick is, maybe we don't even need a quarterback. Maybe we'll just direct snap to LeGarrette Blount, Julian Edelman. We're going to spot you. We're going to spot you know Tom Brady. We're going to spot you know Jimmy Garoppolo. We're going to spot you all these things. Really, it's kind of like the presidential debate. The low expectation coming into this next game, and this is going to be interesting with them playing the Buffalo Bills, because with the big win, the assumption is, and with no Tom Brady and no Garoppolo, and that they should just kill the Patriots coming off a really good win. If they don't, this is going to be interesting.
I guess that's a really good point, because I've talked about Rex Ryan a little bit, and we saw the Bills get the big win. Rex Ryan is already in full week taunting the Patriots on his Monday conversation, kind of had a grumbly little Bill Belichick imitation. He's had a tendency of doing this before, and it's what makes him such an entertaining guy to cover in the NFL. But it also sometimes gets you in trouble, because you've run into situations with coaches, with players, with anybody who are sometimes writing checks with their mouth that they can't necessarily cash. If the Bills don't get this done against New England, does Rex Ryan stand the chance of basically undoing some of the good work that he did this week?
They could, but you've got to take that chance from the standpoint of, and knowing Rex as well as I do, and the time he was with me, if you corner Rex, this is exactly what you're going to get. It eventually wore out in New York. Why? Because eventually you've got to win. That's the only way to back it up. It's like any, and I hate to use the term bully, because I'm not referring to him as a bully, but, sometimes the best way to confront a bully is just punch him in the nose. And all of a sudden now, he's no longer a bully. Well, you've got to follow it up with a win. And for them, now it's in Buffalo. And you know the fans in Buffalo and everything. They've got that little bit of chip on their shoulder. And I think they love it, providing you win. But if you do that and you don't win, particularly under these circumstances, it was great to have a great win at Arizona at home. But if you're Buffalo, and if you're Rex Ryan, And now you're playing the team that is obviously everybody's in the division's arch rival, a team that's won the last eight division titles. And they don't have a Tom Brady, and they don't have Jimmy Garoppolo, and even with Ed Brissett or whoever they have in there. If you can't win now in New England, then this creates we're right back to where we were square one last week, and where do you go from here?
Let's head over to the AFC, where no Teddy Bridgewater, no Adrian Peterson, no Matt Khalil, no problem for the Vikings, who go into Carolina and really play an impressive game, beating the Panthers 22-10, their second statement game of the year. Despite it seems that the pieces and parts are falling off the wagon, the Vikings have to be off to one of the more impressive and improbable starts of the season. When you see the way they've played in the last couple weeks, what's the ceiling for these guys?
Well, I don't think there is one, and you can fill it up in three things: defense. Sam Bradford's been great for them, and they'll find a little bit of a rhythm of a running game. But this defense is as good as I've seen, and I've got a little bit of a history with this. This is good, and it's a kind of a no-name defense, with no disrespect to the players. I mean, to most lay people, you're going to name someone on the Minnesota Vikings defense, and they might come up with Anthony Barr, but outside of that, you don't. Now, still, that's a talented defense. They had eight starters that were our former first or second round draft choice. So this is a talented defense. Mike Zimmer's brilliant. They don't do a lot. They're not a complex defense, but they're fundamentally sound in what they do. They know how to attack you. They're great open field tacklers. This defense is as advertised, And this is a team with a quarterback that should be able to manage what they need to do to complement this defense that is very much the team to beat in the NFC right now, along with the Philadelphia Eagles.
When I look at the Vikings, what I see is a comparison to last year's Denver Broncos in a lot of ways, a team that, again, very talented defense, not all that tricky. There's not any sort of a gimmicks or anything you have to overcome. But it seems to me like this is maybe, to an extent, a poor man's Denver Broncos from last year with an offense that maybe has an opportunity to match that or even exceed the Broncos, and they managed to go the whole way. So when you look at the Vikings, that's a pretty fascinating story. We'll see where that goes. But as for the Panthers, they lost one regular season game last year. They've already lost two. From the macro level, what seems to be off?
Well, and that's a pretty lofty bar, you know, to
right.
Two games. So, oh, my God, you doubled your roster from last year. Well, wait a minute now. That, you know, that's pretty tough sledding. I think what we saw in Carolina, everybody talks about the Super Bowl hangover. I don't know that I believe in that, although the numbers might indicate that. But when you play Carolina, the key is you got to get Cam Newton to throw the ball 35 times or more. Now, you could say that about a lot of teams, but Cam Newton's numbers, his productivity, falls off precipitously when he has to throw the ball 35 times or more. His 2.5 touchdowns to interception ratio drops to 1-1. His completion percentage drops down. I think he's 7-16, something like that, in games that he throws the ball more than 35 times. And so that's exactly what happened in this game. I think he threw it exactly 35 times. And they couldn't get the running game going. Again, let's go back to the defense, the turnovers that they created, the short field they were able to put that offense on. So I think this was more of less of an indictment of Carolina than it was noteworthy of what Minnesota could do on the road in Carolina.
Well, let's go to another team that's struggling after their loss last night in Monday Night Football. The Saints are 0-3. They're 0-2 at home, which is even more disturbing. Where does this team have to get better, and how much time do they have left in which to do it?
Well, this keeps coming back to the same formula. This is a team whose defense is bad in biblical proportion. I mean, I've been saying all week long that the biggest concern I had going in, and this is a perfect example. You look at the game. Drew Brees feels like if I don't score 30 points, and last night 30 was not enough, but if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. When he gets in that mode, 2 years ago in 2014, he threw 17 interceptions. Why? Because they were next to last in the league in defense. 2 years before that, 2012, he threw 19 interceptions. And that's not Drew Brees. Why? Because they were last in the league in defense. They've got to go out and you know, if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. And that puts Drew Brees in a situation where he has to maybe make some throws or do some things that he wouldn't normally do in a more equitable situation. Even though Drew Brees had a brilliant night, Matt Ryan, who now the last two games has looked more like the Matt Ryan of old in terms, you know, had a very equitable night in what he did. And I just think the defense that New Orleans is spotting team and what Drew Brees has to do to overcome that. I mean, throwing the ball 54 times, I don't care who you are, it's just not a good thing.
Well, we'll wrap up with one of the faces of the league here. Last week, there were questions surrounding Aaron Rodgers, questions surrounding the Packers. You know, is something really wrong? Packers come out, Aaron Rodgers throws four touchdowns in the first half and does it effortlessly. For the Packers now, they got Eddie Lacy had his first ever 100-yard rushing game in September. Rodgers looks right again. Jordy Nelson is healthy. Was this just maybe the start of something special for the Packers this week against the Lions?
Well, and I think you just pointed out the key for them, their ability to run the ball. In the previous games, they didn't have that kind of rhythm. They need to have that running game as a balance. The unique thing about the Green Bay Packers is the receiving core, like their entire team. It's homegrown. It's always has been. When you had Donald Driver and Greg Jennings and in the heyday of their Super Bowl, and then a young Jordy Nelson. And I thought Jordy Nelson, when he got hurt last year, was great opportunity for the other receivers to get into that rhythm, you know, with now Devontae Adams and then and Randall Cobb and Rodgers, the tight end, to really you know, develop that rapport with Aaron Rodgers, and then now when you had Jordy Nelson back, boy, you're off and running. And early on, we didn't see that. We saw a bit of that last night, that we or on Sunday. Now, what we also saw was the defense that kind of let Detroit back in the door a little bit. So that's still my biggest concern for them. But offensively, it's hard to look at Green Bay and not feel like they may not lead the league in offense that we're used to seeing in these mega games, but they've got some balance and a plan. I like it when they come out of the no huddle, when they have a little more orchestrated offense. I think that suits them a little bit better. So they obviously have got to feel very good about where they are. But they're also in a division now facing a team that we just talked about, the Minnesota Vikings, that are pretty darn good.
He is the coach. This is Brian Billick, and we tell you every week, when you listen to him, you become a smarter football fan. Thanks for your time, Coach. We'll catch you next week.
Sounds good.
Remember to visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. They present the coach, and make sure your family gets getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. So visit SeatGeek.com. Next up, we're going to overtime.
Overtime.
It is overtime, and joining us today, the inimitable Sean Salisbury. You know him from SB Nation Radio. Hey, I also know a guy from there. That's me. And you can find him at Sean Unfiltered on Twitter. I highly suggest, if you're not doing that, you should do that already. Sean, how are you doing today?
Oh,
hey, no problem at all. So we have a six-pack of questions ready for overtime. Let's start right here. Trevor Siemian had 312 yards, four touchdowns in Cincinnati, his very first road start for the Denver Broncos. Judging at the quarterbacking they had last year, is he a better option right now than Peyton Manning or Brock Osweiler was in 2015?
You know, better option, here's the difference. You had Brock, who was more physical than Peyton, and Peyton at the time, you know, when the change was made, and Peyton, who is the smartest quarterback we've ever had, and then the most – the best at manipulating a game plan or a defense that we've ever seen. So, and cerebral. So you had a combination of both, but I think this kid's got both. Now, I don't want to go overboard and say after three starts, he's better than Brock, but Brock only had six starts. So physically, and the ability, the things that he's showing, especially last week on the road, are pretty impressive. I'm not ready to go there yet, just right now after three games, because what Peyton did was keep you out of bad plays for the most part as well. So I think that combination's better still, but I'm impressed with this kid. The quantum leaps he's made from week one to week, you know, now heading into week four, I give him a lot of credit, and I'm actually excited and proud of him. It's fun to watch, but I'll still stick with the two-headed guys from last year because of their experience.
Let's move on to a two-headed guy that's turned out by a necessity up in New England. Jimmy Garoppolo, Jacoby Brissett, don't know which one's going to play, if either. Maybe it's even Julian Edelman, but does it matter? Is this team going to hand Tom Brady a bright, shiny 4-0 record upon his return from suspension?
Yeah, I think so, especially since they have this game at home again. Now, you know that they're going to try to pressure either guy, but the key, if you're going to blitz a young quarterback, you're probably playing into their hands, because then they don't have to go through the whole process of reading it out. They can just pick one receiver and bet the best matchup and throw it. So that's the problem. The key is play them zone and make it go through their progressions. But I'm not sure it matters, although obviously Garoppolo gives you not only the feet and the arm. I think you're a little more limited with Jacoby Brissett. That being said, we've never had a coach in the history of this game who's a better in-game adjuster and better game planner then Bill Belichick. Doesn't matter who they play. I do believe they're going to be 4-0, especially since this game's at home. I think Garoppolo's actually going to play, which is an advantage for New England. And Tom Brady comes back, and Cleveland is his first start, and they will be 5-0 after that one.
Jared Goff, the first pick in the draft, hasn't seen the field yet. No idea when he will. Are the Rams being too cautious with him, judging by the success of all these other young signal callers this season?
I believe so. Now Case Keenum's a serviceable starter and a pretty solid backup and carved a niche in the league, but they've got a really good defense. And at some point, this just tells you how far behind the Wentz's and Dak Prescott's that Goff is coming from his system. It just does. So, and Jeff Fisher is always leery. He's done it with players before about putting young guys in, but as long as they keep winning, he's going to be able to buy time without from the fans without having to start Jared Goff. But it just shows you terminology and how difficult it is to come from that system, an air raid system, and apply it to NFL, you know, the mechanics of getting under center. So they're going to stick with this as long as they possibly can, unless they lose three or four in a row. But Goff's, I didn't think Goff should have been the first pick of the draft. I think he'll be fine. But I liked Wentz. I actually like Prescott even better as well, and Paxton Lynch. So we'll see in the long run. But this is probably the best thing because he came out of camp not ready to play, and Case Keenum's getting him by.
Over in Green Bay, Eddie Lacy notched his first ever 100-yard outing in September, as hard as that is to believe. Notoriously slow starter, but we talked about the weight loss. Is this the year that he finally blossoms into one of the league's great running backs?
He's going to have to, and I think as long as he stays focused on making sure his body's right and can stay healthy, yeah. And it is hard to fathom that that guy's first September 100-yard rushing game this early in the season. It is hard to believe, but as long as Rodgers stays upright and they stay in rhythm, they're a difficult team to beat in the NFC. And I'm going to tell you the key for them, not only is protecting Rodgers, but it'll make it even easier on Aaron Rodgers and everybody else if Eddie Lacy stays healthy and can average a 22 to 30 carries or touch of a game. So, yeah, I think this is a monster step for him. And in a league that we're kind of deficient of top flight first, you know, upper echelon, Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell type backs, I think Eddie Lacy can be one of them as long as the commitment to watching out for his body and taking care of it's there, because he'll get his touches, especially if the season rolls on in a cold weather Green Bay.
Sean, after the Saints' blowout loss on Monday night, Drew Brees talked about that game and said he thinks things will turn around for the Saints. How do they turn around when they're giving up 30-something points a game, and is it too late already?
Yeah, they're not. It's not turning around. That's because Superman, meaning Drew Brees, is so optimistic and has had to carry a franchise. Can you imagine how bad they'd be without him? I mean, good gracious. He has to hang 35 or 40 a week to keep them in a game. They're the notoriously bad defense, and maybe that has something to do with the fact that their offense, you know, scores a lot of points and plays fast and throws the football. But that's in it, you know, a lot of teams do that. So that's a bad excuse. They've got a lot of injuries on defense, but they haven't drafted well either. They're underachievers. It's a bad defense. Sometimes you just got to recognize that your personnel is not as good as the other guys, and it's impossible to ask a quarterback to throw 35 and 40 points a game on you and to throw for 5,000 yards a season and 45 touchdowns. Brees is phenomenal. He is the franchise, but it's not going to change. That team is going to battle for, you know, they'll be lucky to win 6 or 7 games, and if they do, it'll be because of him. It's not changing, though. The culture of that team is offense, bad defensive personnel, and it doesn't matter who the coordinator is, Rob Ryan, Dennis Allen. They're just not, whether they're not committed to it or whether they don't understand how to play it, bottom line is the New Orleans Saints will always, well, at least for now, until the defense gets better, doesn't matter how good the offense is, they'll always be chasing people.
Now for the final question of our six-pack, we go to the Pacific Northwest. Russell Wilson is battling injuries to both his legs. Now, obviously, you want your line to protect you better, but at this point, is Russell Wilson now responsible for finding a way to better protect himself?
Yeah, he is. But he's really, you know, when he is taking some hits, and that offensive line is not good, and he had to overcome that last year and really took another step in his game. But they've got to make a commitment to that position. That's number one. But now we know from the ankle to now the knee, where is he going to be? But, you know, and after this, they have the bye week, so getting ready to play the Jets. Do you rest him and say with Arizona's 1-2 starts, St. Louis, I mean, or the Los Angeles Rams don't have a great offense, should we rest him? I think if he's 85% or more, you play him. But he is really good at finding pockets to slide in. So I give him a lot of credit. The problem is, taking hits in the pocket, you can't defend, and if you can't get out of bounds and it's 3rd and 3 and you got to dive for a first down, you're going to put yourself in a bind. But he is a great player, a great playmaker, but also one of the smartest running / passing quarterbacks we have in this league. But they have to keep him healthy, because we saw them finally break out offensively without Russell Wilson. That team will have to do what Denver's doing for the most part and win on offense. But Russell Wilson, if he's close to being healthy, they'll play him.
That is Sean Salisbury spitting the truth over at SB Nation Radio, and especially on his Twitter feed. Make sure you're following that at Sean Unfiltered. Thanks so much for your time today, Sean. Really appreciate it.
Honored to be on. I really appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that's a wrap for now, but be sure to check all the archives posted over at audioboom.com. Search for NFL Files and check out all the podcasts for every team in the league, because we cover them all. My name's Sean Drotar, and you can follow me on Twitter at sdrotar. That's S-D-R-O-T-A-R, and I will catch you next week.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.